This is the Friday, December 9th, 2016 version of the Market Plus segment. Joining us now is Tom Fitzenmaier. Tom, welcome back.
Thanks, Mike.
We've got a lot of great questions here from our folks on Facebook and on Twitter. And I want to come back to a question we asked you on the show is from James in Kremlin, Oklahoma. He's got a second question. He's asking, what is the upside? Let's say we plant, let's call it 3 million more acres of beans. La Nina sticks around, causes us to have a dry spring in the Midwest. Would that dryness offset the acreage increase?
In the short run, it probably won't. I think if that, in fact, happens, you're probably going to get a run, maybe run new crop beans back up to 11.
Okay.
Maybe even a little stronger than that. Because I mean, just think about it. How freaked out we got about La Nina last year, and we never was there ever any. It was like a figment of everybody's imagination. So if we actually have a dry period, I think they'll react to it a little bit. Now, to some extent, that may also be tempered a bit by what happens in South America. If Argentina also has a problem here and their crop isn't quite what we thought it was going to be, that's just going to sort of magnify the concern up here this summer. So if they have a huge crop and we plant a big acreage, that's going to certainly dampen that.
But, okay. Now, last year, at the tail end of the South American growing season, they had all of those harvest troubles, constant rains and deterioration of crops, and then the loss of so many corn acres. But it seems like when we get dryness in the Midwest, of course, that news is in Chicago that day.
Right.
When it's coming out of South America, there's such a delayed reaction to that.
Yeah.
Just big picture stuff. Is technology going to allow us to get that information faster, do you think, as we go to the future?
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. I get a more detailed South American weather map every morning than I do a U.S.
Really?
I mean, there's a lot of information available, and I know the guys in Chicago are watching that as closely as I am. So, I think that information gap is pretty much gone away.
Okay, we don't have to wait for CONAB's reports necessarily.
Correct.
Anymore.
I mean, it's a confirmation and it's something to watch. But and their soils are different, so you have to be a little careful about the conclusions that you reach based on what their moisture is. But they also tend to get more of the moisture than they need on average. So if their rainfall is diminished just a little bit, it actually, in some cases, it brings them kind of down to normal. So you got to be a little careful about that, too.
Okay. Well, we've got a second question here from Michael in Story City. And Michael's got a long question, but he's asking, what is your take on the upcoming January reports? And given the perceived supply of corn, what are the chances of corn seeing 450 or higher July 17 futures? So let's tackle the first part. Are you expecting any surprises on the January report? Yields coming up again?
There's a historical tendency once they're increased into November for them to be bumped up a little bit in January. So I guess I wouldn't be surprised to see that. But I don't really anticipate it changes that amount to much.
Okay.
I guess I was a little surprised in Friday's report that they didn't bump exports and ethanol usage a little bit. So that could be coming. But when you got a 2.4 billion bushel carryout, I don't see any reason in the world why you'd have $4.50 corn. Why would anybody pay that much? The farmer willing to store it. They're willing to sit on it. Just let it sit out there and let the farmer carry all that for you.
Okay. Even if this La Nina expands, I know that's predominantly Argentina, southern Brazil. Would that lead to, would that give us any reason to get fired up about the corn market?
I'm sure they're going to talk about it. The thing actually what people are talking about that I talk to are more concerned about is this dry weather in the southeastern United States.
Okay.
And the history of droughts moving from the southeast up into the central U.S. Now, probably not going to affect Iowa or anybody west of the Mississippi, but it certainly could come up and nab some and cause some troubles in Ohio, Indiana, maybe southern Illinois. So that's really what I hear talked about more than anything.
Okay. So he's asking on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being very probable 450 futures, 1 being improbable, you're around a 1.
two, maybe.
Maybe a two. Okay. Our next question, Matthew in Windsor, Illinois, on Twitter at Chief321, has two questions for you. One of Trump's nomination picks is Pruitt from Oklahoma to head the EPA, and he hasn't historically been overly outspoken in support of ethanol. Matthew's questions are, do you have any worry as him, as an EPA head, as it pertains to biofuels?
Yeah, there's a couple. Number one, he's not real keen on RINs, so I think those are in danger. As far as ethanol production, I think ethanol is standing on its own. Okay. Its export demand, I think, is probably going to pick up. And I think ethanol is going to be. I'm not sure he can do much to touch it. I mean, maybe he can mess with the mandates, but we're already using more than the mandates. So what? So what? I think it's the RINs, and I think it's the potential. He could do some stuff that I think could hurt the biodiesel side of it.
Okay.
That's where the trouble is, and that's where I think there's a risk on the bean oil side.
Gotcha.
Bean oil's certainly been elevated by this problem with the Malaysian palm oil market, but it's been also supported somewhat by the EPA's attitude about biodiesels and diesel fuel. That could be a problem from him, and everything I've read says that that's one area to be cautious, but I'm not all that concerned about ethanol.
Okay. If the RINs go away, how would that change the industry? Those are the renewable identification numbers that are created whenever ethanol is brewed.
Right? Yeah.
Okay.
Again, I don't know that it'll have any effect on it. It's just it's a game that people play.
Okay.
In the oil industry.
Their RINs around to meet their targets.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Matthew's second question is talking about something you mentioned on the program. The spread or the ratio between new crop beans and new crop corn is higher than it has been historically. Matthew's asking, is the 2.65:1 bean to corn ratio going to narrow?
Well, I would guess it'll narrow if people go out and plant a bunch of beans. If you plant 3 to 5 more million acres of beans, that's going to tend to be supportive of corn prices and negative to beans. So I would guess it would pull it back into that 2.4. That's what I was alluding to on mm-hmm. the show when I said if you're going to go out and plant beans and as he said, the incentive is there to do so with new crop beans up at 1040 or 1050, wherever they get to. But you, in order to take advantage of that, you've got to make the sale. You can't just plant the beans and hope.
Because if everybody's looking at these numbers and everybody plants beans, that number's going to change.
Right, yeah. It's going to.
How aggressive would you be for those that have revenue insurance? Would you be selling up here at these prices, call it 1040, call it 1050, 1030, would you be selling 50% of your guaranteed bushels?
Oh, I think you can do that, yeah.
Okay.
Because, I mean, you're up at levels where if you kind of work the basis a little bit, you're going to be getting pretty close to $10 cash beans in a lot of areas. And boy, that's if you have any kind of yield, you can kind of make that work. So, I think you'd have to look really hard at that. I mean, I know guys that are going a lot stronger than 50%, and I'm always a little uncomfortable with that. But I mean, the numbers kind of make sense.
If you go north of 50% of guaranteed bushels, would you do any kind of a call to re-own it, or would you wait and see what happens a little bit?
I guess if you're making a sale and you can't stand it, then I guess going out and spending some money on a call probably isn't too bad an idea.
Okay,
but
only use it as a tool to make the sale.
Correct.
If you need to.
If you can't sleep at night and you can't stand it and you're afraid you're going to miss the move back to $17 or whatever, then spend a little money on a call and feel better.
One of the things that that I hear a lot in the countryside, and I know you hear a lot, is this push to bean acres is going to be driven by profitability, looking at the numbers, but also as bankers look at spreadsheets, look at balance sheets and say, hey, a little riskier out here, we don't want you spending all that money. You talk to a lot of folks. Is that a valid reason you think?
You know, that's the one I hear all the time as well. These guys won't have enough money to plant corn, but they're going to plant beans. And I was like, how does that conversation go when you go into the banker and go, you know, Mr. Banker, I don't have enough money for planting corn, but I'd like some money for planting beans. I'm just afraid that Mr. Banker's going to go, nah, maybe we just won't give you any money for anything and give it to Fred down the road. I mean, that argument sort of bothers me, I guess.
Okay.
Because I'm not sure those meetings with the banker actually go like that.
Right. Right. The banker is going to be just as willing to, right, find somebody else who...
And if people are in a rotation, how do you do that anyway? You're not going to plant beans on beans. Yeah. So you only have a certain amount of flexibility in that anyway.
Although I was talking to an agronomist. This was last year in southern Minnesota. He had a number of clients growing beans on beans. And they were pretty excited and pretty pleased with it. So, I don't know. Talk to an agronomist. Don't take my advice for it, you know, viewers. I am not an agronomist. Right? I can barely keep plants in my house alive. Another question for you here. Rodney in Edgar, Wisconsin wants to know, what is setting up to drive the cattle market in 2017?
Well, I don't think there's any the basics. I mean, the numbers, how are these numbers going to shape up? You know, we've had fairly low placements, but that's going to change in the next cattle on feed report, I think. And you're going to start to see placements really pick up. You had all these calves that were doing pretty, like we talked, out in wheat ground and out in and pastures held up. We had an awesome fall, so there was no reason to bring those calves in, let them sit out there, put on weight. So they're going to come in with some pretty nice weight on them. Okay. So I think you're going to start to see those numbers pick up through the winter. If we have a quasi-mild, maybe not mild, but sort of average winter, you know, the cattle should do okay. And then you have to look at demand. I mentioned it on the show, and I guess it's worth repeating. Is this strength in the dollar is a giant headwind for all of us involved in agriculture, and that's particularly true with beef exports. Yeah. So that's something that I think you need to watch really closely. And then you've got this huge differential between high beef prices and pork and poultry that's quite a bit cheaper. So all that is going to be a problem for the cattle market.
Yeah.
And we're up at the top end of a trading range that, I don't know, maybe you should be taking a look at some of that.
How far out into the future would you be willing to pull the trigger on some sales?
We've mostly been going through April, although I have had a few guys that go out to August. That August is pretty heavily discounted, and that's a little hard for me to get excited
about. Right around 100, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But April cattle are getting up to levels, you know, 112, somewhere up in there. I think it's worth taking a look at.
Okay.
Because most of the people I talk to can make some money if they're selling those cattle at that level.
Sure. So. You know what's interesting on the cattle market? I read a report by Erner Berry that of the 41 weeks in the year, you know, however long ago that was, lean ground beef had sold cheaper than boneless, skinless chicken breasts, 37 of those 41. So they're finding a market for that low end. It's the high end cuts of beef that we're having trouble competing with poultry and pork.
Grind up those dairy cows and you get some pretty cheap hamburger.
I've sold a couple cows that have they made delicious burger, but they weren't a lot of T-bones on it. Not a lot of high-quality ribeye. We've got a question here for you to help us understand the futures markets in general, Tom Fitzenmeyer. Our Ask the Analyst question today is, what are the pluses and minuses, the drawbacks or opportunities of selling in December as we approach the end of the year? Is there anything extra to think about this time of year when you're making sales?
In terms of futures sales?
Yeah.
I don't really. I mean, I think all the issues revolving around year end are pretty much cash oriented.
Okay.
You know, whether you want to take the income, not take the income. It used to be structured tax wise that there's some advantages to some things you could do in the futures, but that has all gone away. So okay. I really, unless you're using it as part of some sort of a tax strategy on the cash side to rehone or whatever, then maybe. But other than that, no.
And you don't see any big movements by the hedges as we approach end of a year because their fiscal years are probably already over.
There's always rebalancing, and so you have to try and figure, okay, well, what's made a good move and what hasn't, and sometimes you'll see some, but you know, everything's kind of been moving up. Maybe you'll see a little selling of beans and buying of corn because beans have gone up a little more than corn has. But I don't think that's going to be. I don't see rebalancing being a big deal this year.
Not a factor to keep people up at night.
Correct.
Okay. Well, Tom Fitzmeyer, thanks so much for joining us.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
Be sure to check out this week's M2M podcast as Peter Tubbs tells us about why young veterinarians are working in remote, underserved regions of the country. And join us again next week for our feature story to see how it all plays out. So until then, thanks for watching. I'm Mike Pearson. Have a great week.